because I don't want to go backwards. I want to keep going forward together. That's exactly where we're going to go. God
bless. I'm Steve Walters.
And I'm J.R. Ross.
This is Rewind, Wisconsin Eye's summary of this week in the Capitol, except we're not going to talk about the Capitol first. We're going to talk about the Capitol of England.
Yes.
So Governor Walker goes on a trade mission, and that's great because he's looking at Milwaukee-made Harleys, and he's talking up trade and investments. And then he talks to the prestigious Chatham House think tank.
Yes.
And that's where he says a lot of things, and he does Q&A, but in his speech, JR, he issues the Colby Cheese Challenge to the World.
Yes.
So let's listen for a few seconds to the governor's Colby Cheese Challenge.
Okay.
In fact, Wisconsin received nearly 40% of the awards at the 2014 World Championship Cheese Contest. Our cheesemakers swept 11 of the 90 classes, taking the top three prizes in each class. We want to compete anywhere in the world. You see, Colby cheese comes from Colby, Wisconsin. We believe we make it better than anyone in the world, but we do not begrudge anyone else trying to make a better cheese. In other words, we say, let the best cheese win.
So, JR, here's my question. Chatham House, very prestigious think tank, on their website this morning is what brought Putin to the table and how to keep him there, transatlantic cooperation to prevent and stop mass atrocities. Do you think the governor he didn't talk down to him, but was it right to issue the Great Colby Cheese Challenge in that venue?
Well, he gets to an interesting trade issue internationally about what words can you use for various products. Parmesan, for example, Asiago, Gonzala, these are all names that are associated with certain regions of Europe for cheese, but Wisconsin does them very well. So Wisconsin cheesemakers are very sensitive to this debate about trade internationally right now, in which the European folks trying to limit who can call what. It's like the champagne thing, right? Yeah. It's only champagne from the Champagne region.
Yep.
They want to say it's only Parmesan from that region. Wisconsin folks go, no, we do this very well. I get that trade issue, if you will, that the governor's bringing up in that setting. Because it's a trade mission, and that's a very big topic, if you will, for Wisconsin.
Okay. So it deserved to be at that speech and for
sure.
Chatham House.
For the reason why he's in England, yeah. I get why he's bringing that up. And he talked about it early in the week, too.
Okay. But what drew a lot of attention was his not answering questions on American economic policy and American foreign policy and then on evolution. So let's talk to the governor deflecting. Let's listen to the governor deflecting some of those questions for a few seconds.
In terms of the economy, as you can imagine, and I'm not trying to skirt your question, I just think for me, commenting on foreign policy, or in this case, economic policy in a country where you're a visitor, is not the politest of things. I mean, again, it's one of those, I have an opinion on that, and I'll be certainly happy to answer that back when I'm stateside, but per being old-fashioned and having respect for the president, I just don't think you talk about foreign policy when you're on foreign soil.
Are you comfortable with the idea of evolution? Do you believe in it? Do you accept it?
For me, I'm gonna punt on that one as well.
No,
that does you
really?
That's a question a politician shouldn't be involved in one way or the other on it. So I'm gonna leave that up to you.
But any British politician, right or left wing, would laugh and say, yes, of course, evolution's true.
But to me, I said it's just one of those where I'm here to talk about trade, not to pontificate that. Another issue. I love the evolution of trade in Wisconsin.
Yeah.
That's going well, and I'd like to see an even bigger evolution as well.
Thank you very much. Thank you. Lovely to talk to you.
Thank you.
Okay, so he punted on those. Mm-hmm. Now, he says the Chatham House people knew that I wasn't going to respond and aggressively agree with or disagree with economic policy, foreign, and then evolution. So do you think he stumbled by, in his words, punting on those issues?
Let's start with the foreign policy stuff and the economic stuff. I mean, the Chatham House would have been a perfect setting, if you will, to expound upon those views if you're a presidential candidate, which we all really consider the governor to be.
Absolutely.
So it makes sense to do that. In some ways, it is kind of old school, old fashioned, and respectable to say, look, I'm on foreign soil as American official. I'm not going to criticize the president. I kind of get that. And people didn't get too upset about that. If you look at the national coverage of that, they kind of gave him, okay, we get that. Still kind of odd, though, because the clear intention is, one, yes, it's a trade mission, but Governor Walker is more than his toes in the water right now, right,
yes,
for presidential
does.
Run. So you have to expand on your foreign policy credentials, because as a governor, you don't have any. So this is viewed as an opportunity for him to kind of expand his international credentials, if you will. So that part, you would have thought maybe you talked about it, but I get that. It's the evolution thing that's kind of more interesting, if you will, and got him more blowback this week. Because, you never say I'm punting if you're running for president. You don't get to do that. I mean, I understand why they didn't want to talk about it, or why he thought it was a trivial question. But you don't get to punt. If you think about it, when you're running for president, if you become president, every word you say has an implication. You can roil international markets with a single statement. You can create international incident with a misquote. So if you want to be president, there is a checklist, a questionnaire, whatever you want to call it, of where do you stand on these things, because people want to know. It may seem to be a trivial question that doesn't really have any impact on his views of the important things like ISIS or whatever. But you're running for president. This is, it's big boy time. You have to be able to step up and give a clear, convincing question or answer to questions like this. And you look at the national media's response, it was like, well, look, he's trying to have it both ways, where doesn't want to talk about it. He wants to appeal to the kind of evangelical voters in Iowa without offending them, but also seem mainstream. They think it looks kind of, political, which it probably was. Another answer was, look, I saw a tweet this week. This is the easiest question you'll get running for president. The fact that you punted says something. Does he look presidential by saying, I'm punting? Well, not really. And that's kind of, I think, the bigger takeaway. Now, for his backers, and you've seen all kinds of conservative media had a little backlash this week about this kind of, well, what's it matter to ask about evolution? And, do you really understand the evolution question you're asking? Shouldn't you really be asking, does he believe evolution should be taught in schools, which would be a more pertinent question?
Right.
Well, even when we asked him that in a conference call on
the next day,
he said, I'm not answering that question. It wasn't important 4 years as governor. Why are you bringing it up now?
Kind of thing. And how do you feel as a veteran journalist when he says, look, in 4 years as governor, I was never asked about this. It's not a central issue. At London, at the Chatham House, he says this is not an issue that politicians should engage in. Was that evolution a gotcha question as somebody who's asked?
Of course. Of course, in some ways it is. But it's also a gauge of where you stand as a politician and your views. I mean, it does shape how is he going to view science in general. I mean, does he have a conflict between faith and science? In his tweet afterward, he says no. And honestly, I've talked to people too. So look, if he just gave his answer in the tweet,
yes,
it would have made all this go away. It would have been one statement and you're done. Instead, he kind of created this incident, if you will.
So what does that tell us? He wasn't prepped for the question, and he had to come up with his answer, which is a credible answer, which he tweeted then hours later, but he wasn't ready for that question. He was taken aback by it?
I don't know about that. I mean, maybe he didn't think it was appropriate to talk about that in public. I mean, I don't know what his thought process was, if you will, but you don't get those second chances in presidential politics. It is a microcosm. And look, there's a bigger thing going on. He is a top-tier candidate right now.
At the moment.
And if he stays in there, there's going to be incredible scrutiny on every word he says from now until, whatever he wins or he drops out.
Okay.
And we both know, look, we've been sales reporters for a long time. We know what we are. We get the governor once a week. We get to kind of throw questions at him, and he can kind of go away and gets a break, if you will. The national media will eventually have 3, 4, whatever reporters assigned to him every day of the week.
The Washington Post was in the Capitol this week. Go ahead, Jack.
Everything he says, every speech he gives, that person will be there every day, and it will go on and on and on, and everybody's looking for that John McCain story of how many houses do you own? I don't know. Those are things that are really, yes, they're gotcha questions, but they tell you something. It told us that John McCain was a very wealthy individual and then it couldn't answer how many houses he owned. I mean, well, those are things that matter sometimes for the public.
Let's wrap this up in two ways. Do you think the governor, pretty big gaffe by not asking in terms of the national media?
I don't know if it's going to be like a one that lasts for a long time. There are ways to recover from this easily, but it is going to sting a little bit. And for some national media, they're saying, okay, wait, is this guy ready? I mean, that's the next thing, right?
Yep.
He had this meteoric rise for like 3 weeks of like the good speech in Iowa, the good polls that were coming out. Okay, this guy's the it candidate right now.
Leads the Iowa poll, number 2 in New Hampshire. Go ahead.
Now it's the, okay, who is this guy? Now we, as the national media, have to come in and check this guy out, the story about why he left Marquette. I mean, we know that story. We've written about it before. But now it's the national media, the fresh set of eyes going, what's going on here? Who is this guy? And that's going to continue for a while. The longer he's top tier, the more he's going to get this kind of attention.
And a final P.S. Did you see how Speaker Voss handled that yesterday? He previews that day's votes in the assembly. Mm-hmm. And then he stands up and says, oh, no votes on evolution. So Patrick Marley, the Journal Sentinel, says, well, do you support evolution? He says, two words, I do. Therefore, subtle little dig.
Well, there is a tension in the Capitol right now between Republicans in the legislature and the governor over things like his budget. There's also this kind of thing of like, this guy's running for president, more worried about that than he is about our issues, and we're going to be here. This guy's gone in 2 years, we'll still be here with whatever we have to deal with. So there's a little bit of a tension. And yeah, I've sensed from the Walker's people kind of a little bit of a Robin Voss is being a pain, if you will. So there's a little healthy tension going on.
Well, part of that pain is Voss and many other legislators from both parties are still burning over that casino decision, which we'll talk about in a little bit. Okay, topic two. I'm surprised at the amount of, well, why should I be surprised? The UW system is pushing back pretty effectively against the governor's plan for $150 million cut in state aid, but in exchange for governance. You had the UW-Madison Chancellor Blank come to the Capitol on Wednesday. Then she held informational meetings for her campus. She says, I'm sorry, layoffs in April. And both the chancellors from Madison and Milwaukee come and talk to the speaker. And then yesterday, Speaker Voss, a graduate of UW-Whitewater, salutes three of their national championships. Mm-hmm. The UW system seems to be having some pretty effectively fighting the governor's plan. Agree?
In some ways, yes. But now the pushback's coming from the governor saying, okay, wait, it's a 2.5% cut over 2 years. You have reserves of $1.56 billion January 31st. I'm not sure the average person's going to go, how can they not make this work? Yeah, 2.5%? How's that not work? I mean, they're pushing back hard because university officials have wanted this freedom for years, right? Yeah. What have they said? We just had the freedom. If we just not have to worry about these things, we can save so much money.
These shackles of UW
but
buying
now they want
rules
the freedom
and everything else.
And no cut.
Remove these shackles.
That's not going to happen. Now there's a third thing that's actually kind of made it a little bit dicey for them, a permanent tuition cap. Now, let's be honest.
Yeah.
A permanent tuition cap can't be done. You can't bind future legislatures. Governor Walker's talked about this block grant being a permanent source of revenue where they have assurances going forward of CPI every... Doesn't work that way.
Or the growth in sales tax.
Every future legislature can go, okay, notwithstanding this law, we're going to do this.
Right.
Okay, so let's be honest about that first off. But if you have the prospect of a cut, no authority, and a tuition cap, that's your worst case scenario for the university right now.
But the term this week was flexibility in the Capitol. Number one, maybe we should move up the date that the regents become the authority with complete autonomy, because right now it's scheduled July 1, 2016. Maybe we should move that up. Maybe we should cap tuition. And maybe we should massage the cuts. Instead of 150, 150, maybe 100 cut the first year, 200 the second. So now you got everybody looking for compromises. Don't you agree?
Yes. Problem is, I'm not sure what the compromise is going to be. And if that compromise is a smaller cut but no authority and a tuition cap, that's still a bad thing for UW, right? I mean, I get the sense that lawmakers are having a hard time letting go of the system and saying, okay, we have no authority over them anymore. That's going to be a tough sell. Voss is a very vocal advocate of reducing the size of that cut.
Yes, he is.
But until we see the May revenue reestimates, if they're needed, remember, there's no guarantee no more money's coming in.
Right.
It's going to be tough to reduce that cut. Where are they going to find the money to do that? They're already worried about K-12 and trying to shave them from the haircut they're taking. Where does it come from?
Right.
You know, that's a difficult thing.
And Voss also told us yesterday, I had met with my members in their caucus before the session day. We must fix transportation. They are not taking that $1.3 million in bonding that the governor recommended.
And do you think that those Republicans are going to say it's more important to get rid of bonding and take care of roads or, you know, the university folks who've got that big giant reserve? And now, granted, university folks will argue over and over again that money is committed. It's not a free pot of money.
It's not all committed.
That's right.
I mean, they've been able to argue in the past that 70% of it is committed. And so the answer is, well, that 30% non-committed.
And the other thing is, if you look at the budget closely, there is a increased authority for things like tuition from growth in students. So there's other pots of money coming in that make it look, you know.
So you think a key element in whatever compromise is how much of the reserves the UW system has agreed to put towards offsetting
the authority. I mean, if there's a cut, no authority, and tuition cap, again, that's not good. I get... That would be the worst case scenario for UW, I would think.
Okay. Okay, let's talk about what the Assembly did yesterday. They rewrote state law so that auditors can investigate how the GAB, the Government Accountability Board, resolves campaign finance complaints. Why was that needed?
If you remember, go back, the first audit that was done, the GAB asked then Attorney General J.B. Van Hollen, okay, look, we've got these records, investigative records, and state law says we can't turn them over. They are secret. Can we give these to the LAB? And Van Hollen said no. And Kevin Kennedy, in one of the hearings for the joint audit meeting, said, look, I was hoping for a get-out-of-jail-free card from J.B. saying, yes, give them to him.
Yeah.
But we can't. It's penalty by law. So now this allows me to go back and look at the investigative records and see what else is there. It'll be, in the words of some members, a more complete review this time to kind of fill in some blanks. The bottom line, though, is there is still this movement to try and reform, overhaul, destroy, whatever word you want to use, the GAB.
Right.
That's still very real. Talked to Dean Knutson yesterday, still hoping for a bill by April that would do this. So, you know, the GAB may welcome this, and they've said we're an open book. But whatever they find, even if it's not that bad, Republicans who are very critical of the GAB will use it to build their case of this place is out of control, we got to change this, you know, agency and bring it back in, et cetera, et cetera.
And yesterday at the press conference with Speaker Voss, Sam Kirkman is leading, is the chief sponsor in this bill, and she was asked, once GAB can look at how, I'm sorry, once the auditors can look at how GAB resolved complaints, do you want to go back and look at past complaints? And she said, oh yeah. Mm-hmm. So they don't want to use it just going forward, they want to go back. Another bill, right now, JR, you've seen the wine samples and the beer samples in our grocery store aisles. Mm-hmm. Well, Representative Clayfish got the assembly to, and Representative Jocasta Zamarripa, who has a
distiller.
She has a distiller in her district.
At least so, yep.
So they made it fine to give out. Now, it's important how much of this. 1/3 of a shot, correct?
Half an ounce, yes.
Half an ounce, 1/3 of a shot.
One sample, half an ounce. You can't get like half an ounce, half an ounce, half an ounce, and half an ounce and have a good drive home. You've got to get just that half an ounce and that's it.
Well, if Jack Daniels is in aisle 4 and if Korbel Brandy's in aisle 5, can somebody?
Nope. So Jocasta said no. That's the half an ounce, one sample, that's it. One sample, no more than that. So that the concern is, though, is that you get multiple samples, you drive home, and you're not safe to be on the road. They're saying, no, this is just half a shot, which puts it in the same realm as these wine tastings or beer tastings where you get a little cup kind of thing. You know, I mean, it's not a huge, huge bill, but they've said it's going to help distillers. We'll see. I think they're doing fine in Wisconsin as it is, but we'll see.
Well, it's very interesting that we're getting some startup. And Representative Clayfish says this is a free market bill. Just interesting.
Yes.
Finally, GPS under an assembly passed bill. GPSs could not be put on a vehicle that you don't own to track someone else's whereabouts. This would exempt cops, of course.
Yep.
This is pretty significant in terms of where technology is, don't you think?
Yeah, it's kind of about protecting us from that. And also, I mean, look at the harassment aspect to it. Somebody puts a GPS system on your car, secretly can track where your whereabouts. There's, you know, people have done that before. We've seen cases of that. They've done that, use it to harass somebody. That's, you know, part of what that's talking about.
Okay. New subject, the term game changer we heard. The Menominee tribe says, we have an offer, a game changer. Mm-hmm. If you let us contribute $220 million to build the Milwaukee Bucks arena, and, Governor, we'll only give you this money if you allow us to build a Kenosha casino, all will be well for the Milwaukee Bucks and the Menominee tribe. In fact, let's listen to how the tribal chair talked about this offer in a press conference in the Capitol.
We call this contribution the $220 million Menominee Bucks for Milwaukee Bucks. This will happen if the Menominee Hard Rock Kenosha is allowed to move forward. We ask then that the governor reconsider that decision based on the new information that's come forward. And we really pray that he takes us serious, because we are serious, and that we can have him reconsider this, because we know the Bureau will allow that.
Okay, JR, you saw the tribal chair from the Menominee, Republican Senator Van Wongard in the background, Dems and Repubs in the background, but was this just a non-starter from the get-go?
Well, Governor Walker's already made up his mind, already said no. Can you imagine if somebody said, I'll give you X millions of dollars to change your mind on subject Y, and you said yes? Governor Walker would get crucified for that decision.
Right.
So what you're talking about here with the casino, it seems kind of like quid pro quo, doesn't it? You do this, I'll give you this. There's that has really been talked about this week. It's more because people said they're not sure there's a real offer. Now, Menominee insisted, and their backers, that yes, this is real. We can really do this. We have money coming in enough, or we would have money coming in from this casino to cover the $220 for the Bucks, to put up a bond of $275 million to protect the state from any lost revenue, and still make our compact payments, and still have money left over to turn a profit. That's pretty impressive if that's possible. There are some doubts about that from a few folks, but they said, yes, we can do this. The flip side is he's already said no. There's a week, less than a week left till the actual deadline. How would he look if he went back on his word and said, no, I'm going to change my mind?
Well, at a WisPolitics event, you got DOA Secretary Mike Hipsch, and he responded to this. And what did he say?
Because it wasn't real. You don't negotiate through press release. Between the bond and this, he's like, that's not real to us. Now, again, Mommy insists it was. They've said we brought this up before at a smaller number, but it got more real since then. I just think they're trying to keep pressure on the hopes. Because what have they got to lose? He said no. If he says no again, what's the difference to them?
Right.
You know. But
are there any dying embers of hope for the tribe? I mean, they asked to meet with the governor when he gets back from London, and today tribal members are setting out on a march from Kashina, the reservation, to the capital to protest Walker's decision. Are there any dying embers of hope?
I don't see anybody saying yes, he could change his mind. I mean, can you think of how many times Governor Walker's changed his mind?
No.
In the last 4.5 years.
High-speed trains.
Once he sticks
Medicaid money, federal Medicaid money, no.
And no matter how he talks about it, that politics weren't at play, it's just, it looks to a lot of people like, look, he turned it down on a Friday, went to Iowa on Saturday, a place where a bunch of conservatives said, look, don't expand gaming in Wisconsin, it won't go well with us.
Yeah.
How would he look to presidential primary voters, a guy who took a stand and then reversed it because he got a $220 offer from the tribe to take him off the hook for the Bucks? Now,
that's right.
The flip side is, he's actually kind of, the nominee have kind of put the Bucks people in a bad position because outstate lawmakers don't want to vote for anything that gives state money to a city arena. So they're kind of going, look, there's an offer on the table that we rejected. That's one reason to say no. You know, it's kind of an interesting side issue to this whole offer, if you will.
So you think the Menominee tribe offer may have hurt the governor's chances of getting this deal?
Absolutely. I mean, they don't want to, there are certain folks you talk to outstate who are like, I don't want to do this. I don't want to set the precedent. I get we'd lose the Bucks, you know, if we don't do this, but look, Miller Park was built with a 5-county sales tax. Lambeau Field renovation, sales tax approved by local voters up there.
Yes.
Why would we want to take state money from outstate when I live up in, I don't know, let's say Kaukauna or Hudson? I don't go to Bucks games. Why do I have my, you know, my money go toward that? I know the governor says, look, this is coming from the jock taxes, we're separated out, but they still see it as state money, state revenue should be privately financed.
Assembly GOP leaders, Voss and John, the co-chair of finance.
John Nygren.
Mr. Nygren, have said, no chance unless local city
buy
and
in.
County governments buy in. Now, Barrett has endorsed it, but endorsing it, waving your hand, and that's different from ponying up to $50 million that he wants city and county.
Absolutely, and that's until there is a number, I think they have a hard time passing that bill through the both houses. Another thing that's been interesting brought to me is it's in the budget right now. If you think about it, if you're Robin Voss, do you want to pull that bill out and say, look, Milwaukee Democrats, you guys want this so badly? You find some votes for me to let my members outstate who don't like this off the hook.
That's a good point.
Now, it is rare to pass a bill needing minority party votes to pass it. It doesn't happen very often. I can think of a handful of times in my time in the Capitol. But it might be one way to kind of save some heartburn from these guys. Like, I just can't do this.
Great.
They got to find the votes to do it.
And one other issue, JR, at the same WisPolitics event, Secretary Hipsch said if there is a windfall in state tax revenues, and we'll know by late April or May, it should go for another tax cut?
Mm-hmm.
Well, excuse me, Speaker Voss yesterday said any additional windfall should go to minimize the cuts to the UW. And what about K-12? Are we reading from different playbooks here?
That would be, the cynic would say that message is meant for national voters and not for the bet was best for Wisconsin, if you will. That Walker could say, look, even in tough times, we cut spending and then we got more money, we cut taxes again. That might be the message. If you're a cynic about what that says, I mean, the reality is that whatever changes the budget bill are going to come from lawmakers. Governor Walker's had a shot. Now, he can throw ideas out there. He can throw something in the errata bill if he wanted to, I suppose. But the reality is those May numbers come out. It'll be in the hands of joint finance. They'll be the ones making the changes. And their priorities are K-12, UW, bonding. Not necessarily in that order,
right.
Though I think K-12 is number one. that I think is going to be the biggest heartburn for folks, because it's like, okay, look, even I talked to really conservative members of the assembly who are saying, okay, the economy's picking up, we're doing well, we gave a big tax cut last year, and I'm going to go to my school and say, you're flat for 2 years, and we're going to, you know, give the Bucks $220 million. That, even though they're not the same pot of money, right, that is a hard sell to make back home. And I think that's going to be the priority.
You're also diverting income taxes paid by jocks, mm-hmm, NBA players, which would go normally into the general fund, and diverting it to the new Bucks arena. Okay, time for the WisPolitics stock report. Rising.
So the Milwaukee streetcar, I mean, this thing's been going on for 25 years.
The Milwaukee desire for a streetcar. Okay,
yes,
go ahead.
They finally signed the bill. They finally got it go. They've got a budget approved.
$124 million.
Yes. So they've got 55 of that as federal money. Now, what's interesting is there's a dynamic to everything, right, with Milwaukee. And the critics say there's a lack of vision in Milwaukee. They've got more pressing issues like crime. They should be taken care of. Where's your Bucks money, Mr. Mayor? You're going to find tax money for this, you know, they call it a trolley, if you will.
Yeah.
The supporters go, look, there is a vision. This is part of development. There are all these, like, businesses that want this. And saying,
all these millennials want to write it. Go ahead.
We'll invest in downtown Milwaukee if you build this. We'll do this. Young people will move back into downtown. Now, if that happens, we'll see. But the interesting debate is it hasn't been back to the Bucks arena because even though it's not the same pot of money, Republicans go, look, where are your priorities? If you can find that money, why should I find money for you from state coffers?
For an arena.
Now, the flip side is Walker's made a pretty good argument about that. Of, look, okay, you guys say it's estate money for the arena. If the Bucks go away, we lose the money we have now.
$10 million a year plus.
We're on the hook for the Bradley Center with no anchor tenant. That's a problem. So right, there will be a cost outstate. But that's not winning out right now in that message war.
Okay. And mixed?
State revenues. I mean, we haven't even got to May, and you see in a re-estimate, they spent it already, right?
Yes, they have.
So, and that's the thing, too. You talk to people in the Capitol, like, yeah, we're hoping for good news in May. There's no guarantee. I went back and looked the last six cycles, okay? 11 and 13, we got good news. 1.4% growth, 1.6%, you know, $500 million.
Yeah.
2009, the world was imploding. We had to come back with, yeah, we're going to be short $1.6 billion, I think it was, from where we thought we were in
January.
So it
didn't get better. It got much worse.
I think in 05 they got good news, and 03 it was nothing's going to change, or so reverse. But so it's not a done deal, we'll get more money in May. Now, the government administration said, hey, we're doing okay. Big thing's going to be the April tax collections to see,
yes,
this whole change in withholding. What's the impact going to be? I think they're still trying to figure that out. But again, the money's already been spent. Tax cuts.
Yep.
They want to do K-12,
yep,
bonding, university. Oh, and Brad Schimmel's week says what? I want more money for heroin.
Yeah,
to fight heroin.
These treatment programs, diversion programs.
Talked to Nygren yesterday, said, I have a package that's going to come out, but it's going to be after the budget. That's
after the budget.
Outside the budget.
Falling.
The nominee. I mean, whether it was real or Hail Mary or a combination or, you know, just a total, like, kind of stick it to Walker kind of thing of he's kind of done it to us, we're going to try him in a bad position. It just has caused all these ripples, if you will, where lawmakers from the area have hope, hey, this is a real offer, let's do this. Lawmakers from outside of Kenosha and Racine kind of saying, we don't want the Bucks arena, saying, hey, there's an offer there, I can say no for another reason besides, like, you know, state money going to a city arena. It's just created this kind of, like, problem, if you will. And again, it's the appearance of quid pro quo of, do you want to set a precedent of, I'll give you these millions of dollars if you do this? That's a very difficult sell to make. And I just don't think there's any appetite, if you will, to do that casino from Governor Walker. I mean, that ship has sailed.
And just a PS on that, the State of the Tribe speech March 5th.
Should be interesting.
Won't that be interesting? Yeah. I'm Steve Walters.
And I'm J.R. Ross.
That's Rewind for February the 13th, Friday the 13th.
Yes.